In today's episode of What's Up ABQ, we focus on something a little more serious than our usual interview topic, saving lives. Yes, you, dear podcast listener, can save and extend someone's life.
What better thing can you do than to give someone the light at the end of the tunnel?
Ryan and Lindsay will tell you what you can do to be a hero and literally give a part of yourself to give someone hope. It's What's Up, ABQ.
What's up, Albuquerque? This is Lindsay.
And this is Ryan.
And this is season four of What's Up, ABQ.
What's up, Albuquerque? This is Lindsay.
And this is Ryan.
And today we are sitting in a room full of very passionate people. We are going to go around and introduce ourselves, and hopefully you guys can find out a little bit more about something you may not have thought about before.
Dr. Fidel Barrantes here. I'm one of the pancreas transplant directors for Presbyterian Transplant Center. I do work with American Associates, one of the transplant nephrologists here, and I work with the New Mexico Kidney Foundation.
I'm Leonda Romero, and I work for the New Mexico Kidney Foundation as the office manager.
And I'm Tim Armour with the New Mexico Kidney Foundation. I'm the chief operation officer.
I'm Barbara Williamson, and I'm a board member of the New Mexico Kidney Foundation, and I serve specifically on the education committee.
I'm Nancy O'Brien, and my husband is soon to be a recipient of a kidney, we hope.
Yeah, right. My name is Pat O'Brien, and I'm waiting for a kidney transplant.
My name is Sue Freeman, and I'm coordinating some of the kidney awareness.
I'm Lorenzo. I'm Lindsay's husband and green chili and red chili expert.
We always have to have the expert on red and green chili in every podcast, so I'm glad that you joined us today.
No, especially last time, you really red chili.
I always bring my wisdom.
So I wanted to start and get a little bit about the history of the New Mexico Kidney Foundation here in Albuquerque, and I guess the whole state of New Mexico. Tell us a little bit about how you got started and sort of what you do today.
Well, Dr. Barrantes, I think, is probably the best, since he is essentially the founder of the New Mexico Kidney Foundation.
So I think the foundation started in 2015. We had interest from providers and doctors from this practice, from Renal Medicine Associates, and also some patients, patients who recognize the need of more education, recognize the need of more awareness in the state. So we decided to start this nonprofit that was initially called the RMA Kidney Foundation. And then after a couple of years, it evolved into the New Mexico Kidney Foundation, and it has been a wonderful opportunity to help patients on different projects. And the foundation primary goal is to educate the public, increase awareness, and support with some philanthropic project that we have to patients who are actually affected with kidney failure. We have these projects running for the past 5 years, and a team can kind of delve more into the project. And it has been a difficult journey for many of us, because we all have full-time jobs, and then we all work on this as part of our free time. And we have wonderful board members who are very passionate about, and I think they have the heart in the foundation, which makes much easier to run this organization. And we are hoping to grow more statewide, and hopefully in the next few years we can develop a different project that could be more available to other parts of the state.
I know that there are a lot of misconceptions maybe around kidney donation, receiving a kidney. What is the process for somebody who maybe, let's start with somebody who wants to donate. How do they donate? What is important for them to know? Because I know this is something that a lot of people have never had to really consider, and then it comes up and, they may have some worries or some concerns. How does that go?
I'll start with that, and then I'll turn over the specifics to Dr. Barrantes. Really, for kidney disease, the best treatment is transplant. Of the statistics right now in the United States, I think there's roughly around 100,000. 90% of those, transplants in general, 90% of that is kidney transplants that are needed. And the statistics are that the number of transplants that actually occur, it's about 1 in 5 of those who need it. New Mexico is fairly reflective of that based on our population, et cetera. So one of the biggest things we can do is first off, is to register, to get on the transplant registration. You do that through DMV, or you can go to the registerforlife.org website. So there's opportunities to do that. And of course, if you register, it's really important that you let your
relatives, loved ones know, because there's been a lot of instances where someone who's registered to donate, and when it comes time, the family doesn't know, and they kind of have different opinions. So that's the big thing, first off, is to be registered, to be willing to transplant. But I'll turn over to Dr. Barantas to talk about the specifics and how that works from the donor's perspective.
In general, I think there is a basic concept here that we do not need two kidneys to live. You know, we can live a fairly healthy life with one kidney as long as the individual does not develop any medical problems and they don't have any concurrent illnesses that will affect the remaining kidney in the future. So that's one principle. Now, how does the evaluation work? I think it's very standard. Most transplant centers, they have what we call a protocol where the donor, what he does is after they contact the transplant center, in this case, in our state, we have two transplant centers. We have Presbyterian Transplant Center and University of New Mexico. So they contact the transplant center and ask to speak to the living kidney coordinator. And typically they have one for each transplant center. So they gather some basic data and they ask some standard questions about, do you have diabetes? Do you have cancer? Do you have any medical illnesses? And they run through all this questionnaire. And that questionnaire basically rule out some patients who do have some risk factors that they can't be a donor. For example, if you have diabetes that is uncontrolled, or you have diabetes, then you can't be a donor. Or if you have, for example, an active cancer, you cannot be a donor. So once you pass that initial sort of a screen period, then you come to an appointment with the living coordinator, and then you go over more in-depth encounter and just learning more about the individual. And they run a battery of tests. They are a standard test. They look at the kidney, they look at the liver, they look at the blood count, they look at cancer risk, you know, do an chest x-ray. If you are above 50, you do a colonoscopy, you do a mammogram, a prostate testing. So once that has been passed, then we do a CAT scan, which is like an imaging of the abdomen and pelvis to look at the individual, make sure they have two kidneys. You have to make sure, you know, you don't want to take only one kidney, no? Exactly, yes, yeah. So you make sure the two kidneys look okay from the outside, and then we do some urine collections to assess the kidney functionality, to make sure the kidney indeed is working more than 100% or 90%, the kidney function. When that is completed, the coordinator presents the case to the transplant nephrologist, like my case, or the transplant surgeon and the transplant social worker. So we go more in detail to look into illnesses that perhaps were not identified earlier, and we look for different aspects. Now, you know, we look for the risk factors in general, and the surgeon looks for the risk factors for the surgery itself. And the social worker look at the more like at the mental health for the recipient, for the donor, you know, in the long term. So once that is completed, and if the donor still has passed all the tests, then they are presented. We have a multidisciplinary committee in each transplant center, and we go over the data. We analyze all the data. We discuss, you know, the encounter that we had with the individual. And then the donor is approved or declined, or maybe we ask for more tests to kind of clarify some question that the whole team can have. The process can go as quickly as perhaps 4 to 8 weeks, or can just go 3, 6, 9 months, you know, and it just depending how fast the donor wants to move. Once that's approved, then the donor in general set a date for donation. You know, and then the donation can happen. The next question you may ask you is, what are the risks for the donor? No, so I think if you asked me this question 10 years ago when I was in training back in the East Coast, you know, I will tell you, donors do pretty good in the long term, and they are even better than the general population health-wise in the long term. But it turned out that there's more data now in the last 5 to 10 years, and we are learning that donors in general, yes, they do good, but they do have a higher risk factor for hypertension, for slightly protein in the urine, and perhaps some kidney disease. But those donors usually are the first degree relative from the recipient, or donors who have certain risk factors. You know, for example, if I am a donor, I'm giving the kidney to my brother or my sister who is in kidney failure, I may have higher risk if Mr. Smith give a kidney to the recipient who are not blood related. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the risks are higher there. And there are certain categories, like, for example, African American donors tend to be a higher risk because they tend to have more hypertension, they tend to have more risk of kidney disease. But in general, donors are screened very thoroughly, and the process is safe. And the long term, provided that the initial risk factors are low, is very good in general for donors.
So earlier you had mentioned a bit of a time frame. Mm-hmm. Does that include the person needing the kidney coming to you? Is that just when, like, you guys start on your end?
Are you asking about whether or not, like, if you already have a donor established?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if the recipient has a living donor, say, for example, had a neighbor or had a family member who wanted to donate a kidney, if the donor is very proactive, then it can happen, the whole process, anywhere between 8 to 24 weeks. If we find some issues in the donor that could be fixed, so sometimes we find donors who have high cholesterol, you know, and we say, okay, we need to perhaps treat the cholesterol first before we move ahead, then that may take maybe 3 more months to get better, get the primary care involved, and then treat it. Or sometimes we discover high blood pressure in donors. You know, donors, you know, they're relatively healthy, they are younger donors, they haven't been adopted to a blood donor before, and then we see them and they have high blood pressure. While having high blood pressure is not a contraindication for donation, but we need to treat it before we donate.
So Dr. Barantes, is it fair to say the donors don't have to pay anything for all of this medical screening? It's like a really good physical, you know, and it doesn't cost the donor, right? Is that correct?
That is correct. And donors do not have to pay. But if a donor is working, and if the work do not pay the donor for the surgery, you know, and the time that it's going to take after, then those expenses, those living expenses, are not going to be covered, you know, by a transplant center. So sometimes there are some grants available that we provide certain allowance to the donor. They can apply for assistance in that for that cases. Transportation is not paid. So, for example, that also need to be covered by the donors. But yes, the whole workup and all the appointments is completely paid by the insurance of the recipient.
In thinking about this, bringing it back out more generally in terms of awareness and education, that dialysis and medication aren't solutions. These are stopgap measures, but that the solution is transplant. That's still the best treatment for kidney disease. And one of the things we learned recently in speaking to our partners at the New Mexico Donor Services is that they informed us there's a pilot project being rolled out, I think, in Texas right now, in terms of the Register for Life, that is for living donors. And not upon death. So that's very encouraging. And hopefully within the next few months, if that goes successfully, then we can start registering as living donors through that same process. So that was really encouraging to hear. So I just think that there might be a lot of either misconception or just no awareness generally in the public about there is this opportunity as living donors. And I think if there were more living donors, we could be addressing this issue more effectively.
But that's still a pilot program, right?
Correct. Right now, it's still a pilot program. I think it's just in Texas. Is that what
yes,
he
sir.
Said?
Yes, okay. Sir. It's just in Texas right now.
And I don't know what the exact time frame is, but this is the first time they've been talking about doing a living donor registry. And so we were excited to hear about that.
So I kind of wanted to bring this full circle because we have Pat sitting here, and Pat is looking for a donor. He's a friend of ours, and we brought him here on the podcast because it's a great topic to talk about. Tell us a little bit, Pat, about your story, finding out that you needed a kidney, and then kind of what's going on in your life now.
I found out I had kidney disease when I was 25, and now I'm about 65, so that was 40 years ago. And I went to a nephrologist, and they said, you'll be on a kidney machine in 5 to 7 years. But fortunately, through good care and God's grace, my kidney function kept declining, but it never got to the point where I had to do that until just a couple of years ago. And so a couple of years ago, I went on the transplant list and I started dialysis. And I started off going to a center, so I'd go 3 days a week and I'd be there for about, I think I was hooked up 4.5 hours. And so it took a lot of time. Plus, when I went home, I was feeling, you know, poor. My stomach hurt. I got a headache. I was tired. And I didn't really feel good until the next day. So it's kind of like knocking 3 days out of the week. And I just started a couple months ago doing home dialysis. Now we do it more. We do it 5 days a week. But I feel great after each session because it's more gentle on my system. And so I feel great. No headaches, no nausea. I can immediately get up and play with my grandkids or go ride my bike or something. And I get to do it at home. And my wife, Nancy, takes care of me, which is great. If I want a cup of tea, she'll go get a cup of tea for me. So it's really, really nice. But still, it takes 5 days a week. So my whole schedule, my life schedule kind of revolves around that. So if friends want to go out for dinner, we have to think, well, we're doing this, and then we have to do 4 hours of dialysis, and then maybe we have time for dinner. And so it kind of, you know, we're getting used to that new schedule. But it does take quite a bit of time, but I'm thankful I get to do it at home. It's really nice.
And I think, you know, we also need to mention Pat got his fistula just yesterday.
So. Yeah, right. I just had my fistula surgery.
Explain for people that don't know what that is, kind of what that means. I don't know what it means, so yeah, please.
First, for your patient perspective, sure. And then I'll fill in.
I do what's called hemodialysis, where they take blood out of your body, goes through a machine that cleans it up, takes out fluid and stuff, and then puts it back into your body. What I've had for the last year and a half is a catheter, which is a tube coming out of my chest, and there's two tubes, so blood comes out of one, goes through the machine, and back into the other. But really, the standard for dialysis is to have what's called a fistula, and that is where they connect an artery to a vein, and it makes a place, it kind of balloons up the vein a bit, and makes a place where you can put in needles. And it's just, it's better, there's less chance of infection and stuff, and so it's kind of, now that I'm waiting longer for a transplant than I thought, this is what I need to do, because it's kind of the standard.
Well, that's an excellent explanation. I don't think I need to fill in any more here. So just kind of backing up a little bit here, when people have kidney failure, which means you may have heard the term, or you're going to hear the term perhaps when you see the doctor about GFR. What is a GFR? GFR is like a sort of a rough term of percentage of kidney function. When the GFR is less than 8%, 7%, and the patient has symptoms, typically a nephrologist or the internal medicine doctor is going to recommend to start dialysis or to start some sort of renal replacement therapy. And dialysis is only one of them. You know, as Pat said, you know, he started with the hemodialysis, where you go to a center for three days a week, 4 or 5 hours a week, depending of how, you know, weight and height. And then the other is called peritoneal dialysis, when you do dialysis at home, again through a catheter in the abdomen. You can also do a home hemodialysis, which he just explained to us. And then the other modality is kidney transplant. So you have hemodialysis in center, you have hemodialysis at home, you have peritoneal dialysis, and then you have a kidney transplant. From all these modalities, kidney transplant by far is the best way to replace kidney function. Why? Because it's increased quality of life, increased length of life, decreases the chances for you to be in the hospital for complication from dialysis, increases in general to well-being, and just the way how you feel. You know, it's amazing when told us his story a few minutes ago, it reminded me the reason why I chose to go to transplant nephrology when I was in training. You know, this is more than a decade ago when I was in the East Coast training. My first patients as a renal fellow at Yale was, you know, seeing patients like him, and he would come to talk to me. I would ask him, how are you feeling? And then he would say, you know, but I feel crappy. That would be the exact word I would say, I feel horrible. It makes me feel, you know, if this patient is feeling that way, so why we cannot do a better job as a doctor, you know? So then I learned more about transplant when I had my transplant rotations, when we asked the patient, how you feel after the transplant? It was a completely different opinion from the patient. It was a complete, it's like a day and night. food tastes better, they think better, they feel better. So that's the reason I move toward a transplant training, an idea, an extra transplant training, and I see these benefits. But also I want to say that transplant doesn't come without cost. You know, there are some side effects, there are some risks, there are some infections that has to be, there are some cancer risk, which you just have to deal with those, you know, and that's part of life.
So before this organization started, what was it like for somebody that needed a kidney in New Mexico?
I think it hasn't changed that much because the programs that have been here already, you know, and you have established renal practices in the state, in different cities, you have established transplant programs. We're here mostly for education, for awareness, and to ensure people don't get to that route, no? Because we want to actually, if you look at our goal is to decrease the risk of, or decrease the rates of ESRD, which is end-stage renal disease, or dialysis. That's our main goal. We don't want people to actually get to kidney failure. We want them to prevent them going there because it's quite expensive, you know, for the patient, for the families, and for the state and society.
And on that note, you know, as well as education, pushing education in the foundation, we realize that these are just patches that, you know, we need to stop with the education. But in addition to that we have programs like the dental scholarship program. Because before I came on with the foundation, I didn't realize that how much work the recipient has to meet, so much qualifications to just get on the list for a donation. So there's many people that can't afford like the dental scholarship program. They have to ensure that because they're on these immunosuppressants for the rest of their lives, huge doses, and then it tapers off, that they have to make sure that there's no infections or gum reduction. And a lot of people can't afford that. So with this foundation, we do have that program to assist patients.
Well, we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back. Mm-hmm.
During the holidays, there's no better gift you can give someone than life itself. Right now, many people are waiting for the donation of a kidney, and you could be their life-giving hero. Donating a kidney is safe, fast, and via a laparoscopic procedure is minimally invasive. The New Mexico Kidney Foundation is dedicated to kidney disease prevention by enhancing awareness and improving the quality of life of people with or at risk of kidney disease through education, research, and philanthropic projects. Please consider including the New Mexico Kidney Foundation in your holiday donations and consider donating a kidney to a patient in need. Learn more at nmkidney.org. That's nmkidney.org.
Hey, Berkey, your favorite Albuquerque-centric podcast now has merch, and it's swanky. We're creating new designs all the time, so check it out by going to whatsupabq.com and click on merch up on the top. We'd love it if you'd help spread the word of our little Berkey Love Fest and helping out the podcast at the same time. And if you purchase before December 2nd, you can use the promo code SANTA for a discount on your order. Sweet, huh? Come on, buy some merch, man. We put a lot of work into this stuff. Just go to whatsupabq.com.
And we're back. Today, we are with
Fidel Barrantes, Dr. Fidel Barrantes from the New Mexico Kidney Foundation and Renal Medicine Associates.
All right, so, you know, we've talked a little bit about the foundation, we've talked a little bit about Pat, but there's another aspect to this whole thing, and maybe, Lindsay, you can talk a bit about it.
Oh, good, put me on the spot.
Okay. You know, it happens every show.
Every show. I don't know why I expect any different. So we are actually talking about this issue because this spring we want to kind of raise awareness for people that need kidneys. We want to kind of raise that awareness for living donors. Yes, there's not a pilot program yet here, but that doesn't mean we can't be aware and find out what is needed. So we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that because we are going to be doing a fundraiser still kind of in the works right now, but we are working on some ideas. And I wanted to kind of let Sue Freeman, my mom,
talk about my mom too. Oh,
that's right, your mom too. Our mom, who is kind of spearheading this this event to kind of talk about what we would like to see happen in the spring, and then kind of just give us an idea.
Well, first of all, this is not just, you know, Pat has mentioned before that we definitely were trying to get Pat a kidney, but he has made it very clear that we want to create awareness for everyone. He knows many other people that are waiting for kidneys as well. So we want to make sure that we create awareness, not just for Pat, but for other people too. So we came up with this idea to do a fundraiser, a bicycle fundraiser. Pat's an avid bike rider. So we just thought, wow, this would really be an awesome thing just to pull it together in the spring and do some kind of a bike coffee fundraiser type thing.
You had me at coffee.
Yeah, I knew that would. I saw your eyes. And your sister's not even drinking coffee anymore. Oh, this is like torture
not
for
my
her.
Choice. I just wanted to be out there. It's not my choice.
But we want to get this going, and we want to help the Kidney Foundation as well, and others out there that are in need. We were in that same position years ago with Ryan, actually, here with the bone marrow transplant, and we had many people that came alongside us to help us. Lindsay wanted to be the donor. And she was tested and didn't match, and my husband and I didn't match either. So he was an autologous donor. So it created a lot of awareness during that time, and that's exactly what we want to do for Pat here and Nancy, his wife. We want to pull this together and see it work.
So any ideas where in town you want to do the bike and coffee yet?
To be determined.
Okay. To be determined. We've talked a little bit about the Bosque, and Pat, yeah. Talk about where you ride.
Yeah, I mean, I ride all over town. I ride with a couple groups, and we always stop for coffee. So, but we ride the Bosque, we ride Tramway, we ride over on the west side, and there's always a coffee shop we can find and stop. So yeah, something like that, probably the Bosque.
So if you're biking and you stop for coffee, what's your order?
Coffee and a roll. Probably more calories than I actually burn.
Honestly, it's good.
So I guess what we want to do is put out there a big ask. We're not afraid to ask for it. So if there are people out there that are considering being a donor or just finding out what that means or how they can start the process to find out if they're even able to be a donor, what is the best way for them to kind of get the ball rolling?
There's a couple of things. One, we have a Facebook page. And on that, on a monthly basis, Dr. Barantas is doing some education with regards to that. We've also reached out to the schools. We've produced a video that the education committee did and getting the word out that way. So I think the key thing really, I mean, the social media and things like this, the broadcast is, I guess, new media with the podcast is an excellent way to getting the word out. It's springtime, you know, you're probably aware that March is World Kidney Day is March 10th. So March is the month for kidneys. So that's a great opportunity. And we would love to partner with you through our connections throughout the state in terms of the renal medical profession generally throughout the state. We have a database of individual professionals that we partner with and other organizations. And then we'd be more than happy to get the word out through our contacts in that regard and just to partner with you guys throughout that process.
So I had a question, and I'm sorry to circle back around. I do this all the time. But I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about recovery time for a donor. When someone comes and donates a kidney, I know for myself, like I'm a mom, I would love to donate a kidney. How does that impact people's life during recovery, and what can they expect in that process?
That's a great question. And I think it varies between patients and how smooth the surgery went. In general, kidney donation surgery goes very smooth. Nowadays, we do what we call laparoscopic procedure, where a few sort of cameras are inserted in the abdomen and then the kidney is removed to a small incision. And typically, patients are up and about the next day. They are having some food and the pain is controlled. They are getting out of the hospital in a couple of days. Most people, I would say, go back to regular lives anywhere between 4 to 10 weeks, 4 to 12 weeks. That's sort of the average. You know, the fitter you are, the healthier you are, the younger you are, then you are more likely to get back to your track, faster.
And if somebody wants to maybe get a little bit more education on what the Kidney Foundation does? I know you had mentioned you guys go to schools. What kind of information can they get and where can they find it?
Well, we just produced a really cute video that is targeted especially for kiddos. The first one was more for elementary age kids, and Sydney the Kidney narrates it, and so that gets their attention, and it's all done in very simple language for kids to understand. And as Dr. Brontes mentioned, the purpose for that is to instill better habits in kiddos and also hopefully have them talk to their parents and families about, you know, better diets and more exercise and just all the really simple things they can do to improve kidney health. We're now working on something for secondary age kiddos, and it's going to be in the form of a competition, a social media competition, where they produce a very short video and we'll have prizes and everything. So really the education has been mostly for prevention. Of course, we don't talk to the kids a lot about donation, you know, kidney donation. That would freak them out totally. So we had to even be really careful how we talked about dialysis, you know, with big machines and needles and all that stuff. But so the education committee has mostly been dealing with the kids and trying to educate kids and their families about prevention.
So both the programs that Barbara's talked about is available both on our website at nmkidney.org as well as the Facebook site at nmkidney, I think is the Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, you look us up on Facebook. But those are our two primary outreach and sources for information. The website is very useful. There's a number of resources there. It talks a little bit about the process. So, you know, they've done a good job, you know, prior to my coming on in setting that up.
And then the first Wednesday of every month, if you log on to our Facebook page, we have what's called Kidney Talks, and they are incredible. Right now, Dr. Barantes has given us a pass, too, on medication, how it affects your kidneys, dialysis, kidney failure. So it gives you kind of a more in-depth view of what's going on, things that I didn't even know how the kidneys worked, and it's not so intense that you're like, whoa, it just went over my head. It's very down to earth, and you can always ask questions to the speakers. They are always willing to learn and like tell you what it is. You know, no question is too dumb, or you don't have to be embarrassed about it. And that's the first Wednesday of every month at 5 p.m. on our Facebook page.
I wanted to continue with this discussion in terms of, I think the one thing that the foundation is here for is to really enhance the education in our state, because, you know, as you may know, the health literacy rates in our state is very low. And that coupled with low education, poor socioeconomic data, and that makes a perfect combination for people who have chronic illnesses, not like diabetes, hypertension, obesity, and therefore kidney disease. This is a problem that is going here to stay. This is not going away. And that's the reason we had a very deep conversation with the education committee for the schools. We tackle this problem since little. I think if you change your habits, if you learn some early habits in the, you know, when you are young, it's most likely to make better choices in the future. You know, it's difficult to change. You know, I'm an adult nephrologist, which means I have patients come to see me after 20 years old. So they have formed habits, you know, and it's difficult to change the habits, you know, and they are waiting for a magic pill I can give them to make them feel better, and that's not their case. So we are here. Most of the time I tell my patient, okay, I'm going to give this medication, but 50% is going to be your work with your lifestyle changes. You know, otherwise, we can't make it work. And the education part, either in the school or in the community, is for that part, is to prevent that. The other part I wanted to emphasize is we want this foundation to grow in New Mexico. And if you please spread the word in other parts of outside of Albuquerque, we're trying to create small chapters, you know, like in Santa Fe and Farmington and Gallup and Clovis, so that way at least we can have people from different areas. We're a rural state, and many patients that we serve here in Albuquerque come from 3 or 4 hours driving here from Albuquerque. I think spreading these prevention measures are going to be very important.
And again, to the point of awareness, I think many people, like me, until I was engaged with individuals who either knew or were in the business of kidney disease, it was no big deal. It's like, you don't even think about your kidneys. It's like, they do their job, that's fine, I don't have to worry about it. According to the CDC, 1 in 7 adults in America have kidney disease. 50% of those between the ages of 30 and 64 are expected to get kidney disease in America, and 90% of them don't know it, according to their statistics. So I really do think that, to a great degree, it's going to touch all of us at some point. So it's important that we all learn about it and take actions, one, to prevent, and then two, to treat it. It's going to affect us all at some point. You know, we're all going to be touched by it at some point, either by somebody we know or personally or a family member.
And I was thinking, we kind of just stumbled upon Pat's illness. He wasn't sick at all. And because of that, we started eating low sodium, like when no one was eating low sodium. It was not easy, but we did things to prevent it. And he still has a little bit of function still, so it's been really good. And we'd be like those people that did not know that we had it, and we could have easily not done anything to take better care of him and stuff. So anyways, it worked out well for us, but awareness is important.
And I think, you know, you have a perfect example here. You know, Pat made the disease progression of a kid slow down. You know, you said about 40 years?
Yeah.
40 years, you know, that's a huge achievement, no? But just to let this kidney function slowly decline, because many times we have, you know, 30 years old who come here with kidney failure. They had high blood pressure for 10, 15 years, they never knew it, they never went to a doctor, and then you are just facing the consequences. It's very, very important to go to your primary care physician. Please do not neglect that, because check your blood pressure, buy in a blood pressure monitor, it costs $30, you can check it in Walmart and Walgreens, you know, you have these free monitors there. Check your blood pressure. If it's more than 120 over 80, 130 over 90, contact your doctor, or maybe make an appointment with a primary care doctor, because you want to intervene early. You don't want to go late, you know, and the earlier intervention you do is the best.
I was really fortunate to have good doctors like Dr. Barantes, and they just were really patient with me, and they told me what I needed to do and gave me the right medications, and I think that really stretched it out quite a bit. And like I said, I didn't have to go on to dialysis until a couple of years ago, which has been wonderful. So I'm thankful for the doctors that I've had.
If I may throw it into, you're talking about statistics. So you're a little bit exceptional, Pat. The majority of cases of kidney disease in New Mexico specifically, according to the data, 60% of them are caused by diabetes. Another 15% are caused by hypertension. So those two things, you know, we kind of take for granted, you know, in our day-to-day lives. You know, I know several people who have diabetes. Don't ever think about what that could end up being, you know, kidney failure ultimately. Same thing with hypertension. So those are things not to, you know, poo-poo. You know, we need to be aware of those. And so that's also important too, you know, as you guys mentioned, you know, in your experience, you had a great opportunity to reduce the need to go on the dialysis because you were aware, you took action, and that the difference shows.
I had a friend, and he was a diabetic, and he was on dialysis, and I was talking to him once, and I said, well, what did you do? When did you find out? And he goes, I found out a long time ago. And he goes, I was supposed to take all these medications and stuff, but they kind of made me feel bad, so I stopped taking them. And I go, Mike, what are you doing? You got to keep taking them. And so I was really surprised, and I felt bad for my friend that he wasn't taking them, so I'm sure it caused the disease to progress more rapidly. And unfortunately, just a couple of years ago, he passed away. And but it was really, you know, it's easy to see from his point of view that some of the medications made him feel bad, but he stopped taking them, and the disease progressed rapidly, like I said.
I want to say something about diabetes. I actually have a sister, an older sister, and when she was 3, they found out she had diabetes. And so she cared for herself. She just passed away at 73, and because she took care of herself. She didn't have renal failure or anything like that. I mean, she had other effects from it, but I was just thinking of what you're saying, and because she watched her weight and they were always active, she had an amazing, you know, 72. They told my parents she would die before she was a teenager, so.
Well, it's type 1?
Yes, as a child. She was 3 years old, type 1, because she took care of herself.
So I want to kind of open it up for anybody who would like to respond to this as we sort of wrap up. What is something you would like to say to future donors, especially in New Mexico?
It's the greatest gift. You're giving literal life to someone. And what better feeling could that bring? You know, it's this terrible disease is affecting someone, and it's not going to get better. The person's it's going to end in a very bad way. So what better thing can you do than to give someone the light at the end of the tunnel?
I also think, you know, it's important to remember you don't need both of those kidneys. We were given two of them. So
don't be greedy.
Yeah, don't be greedy about your kidneys. Exactly. But we, you know, we have two of them, so we do have one to spare.
I think it's important to educate ourselves. And I think I encourage you to educate. There are very good avenues out there. You can go to New Mexico Kidney Foundation. We have some material there. You can go to the kidney.org. That's a National Kidney Foundation website, and they have a wonderful information that you can tap into it. And if you have some interest, just contact the transplant coordinators itself, you know, and then they can guide you more about the process.
There's an important question that I ask everybody that comes on the show. It's a little less serious, so.
To lighten the mood?
And to lighten the mood.
Okay.
Here at the end. And you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I understand.
It's a very personal topic for some people. So.
Rutter?
I've researched.
Oh, so you know. Look at that. Did his homework. Okay.
Can I tell you my experience when I came here? So 2010, I'm sorry. I flew from Connecticut to for an interview here. Had an interview. I was on with the interview, and I asked the physician who interviewed me, where can I go and get some New Mexican food? Say, okay, so go to get some special burritos in, I think it was Frontier Restaurant here in Central. So I went there. I stood in the line, and I ordered my burrito, and then the gentleman in the front asked me, red or green? And I looked back at me. Then I kind of kept quiet. Sir, red or green? To me? What is that? So I said both, and then I realized I was...
So now, if you're going to go somewhere in town for a good New Mexican food, where do you go?
I think it depends on the week.
Okay.
Well, just 1 week red, and the next week green.
Definitely Christmas. Okay. I love both. Yeah. I'm not partial.
If you're going to go somewhere in town, not a relative's house, we had to rule that out.
I like the chili fix. Okay. I don't know if you're familiar. That is, it's wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, I always order Christmas on the side, so because I love them both. But it depends on, you know, with what. Rellenos, enchiladas, it just, you know. And restaurants, my two top are Los Cuates and Sadie's.
Definitely green, and always green. And we go to a little mom-and-pop place on Juan Thibault called El Mariachi, on Juan Thibault between Brentwood Hills and Manal. Family-owned, very friendly, and delicious food.
Definitely green, and I like a different mom-and-pop shop, Papa Nacho's here in town. A lot of us like Papa Nacho's. Excellent food.
So shout out Papa Nacho's.
That's what I love about podcasts is that you can shout all these things out. We're not advertising. We're just telling you what we like. It's fine. You heard it from the people.
So I like green with chicken, red with pork, and I like Papa Nacho's, but I also like Barella's coffee shop.
Well, I'm a Papa Nacho's fan as well. I love Papa Nacho's. But funny story, when I first moved here from Portland, Oregon 20 years ago, I thought, what is it with this green chili and red chili? And Nancy and Pat were here, new from California the year prior. And I remember Nancy and I were trying to cook with it, and we're like, I don't know what is wrong with these people eating this stuff. But the green chili, got to have that. It's best.
Okay, I'll say.
He's the resident.
Yeah, I'm the chili expert. Yeah, I have so many listed, but I'm a red person. I love red chili on everything. I'm gonna go out of Albuquerque and say the Tamale Lady in Mora, New Mexico. Ooh. Check them out. Yeah.
Yeah. You heard it here.
You heard it here. The Tamale Lady. I don't know. I feel like I've answered this on the podcast. Yeah. I don't remember. I kind of am one of those one for each season or whatever you're eating kind of person too. It's taken me a long time to love red chili, but because I married a Santa Fe and I have to.
It's in the contract.
It's in our marriage agreement. I definitely am coming around to more red chili, but I think it just depends on what you're eating.
And I am green on the side, except for certain things that need to have red chili. So you guys, thanks so much for coming on the show. We'll make sure to include as many links as we can in the description when it'll come out. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey Berkey, your favorite Albuquerque-centric podcast now has merch, and it's swanky. We're creating new designs all the time, so check it out by going to whatsupabq.com and click on merch up on the top. We'd love it if you'd help spread the word of our little Berkey Love Fest and helping out the podcast at the same time. And if you purchase before December 2nd, you can use the promo code SANTA for a discount on your order. Sweet, huh? Come on, buy some merch, man. We put a lot of work into this stuff. Just go to whatsupabq.com. Hey, Albuquerque, and thanks for listening to What's Up ABQ, Albuquerque's very own podcast. Every week, Ryan and Lindsay talk to the people who add unique flavor and make a positive impact to our fair city. We help point you to the places you need to see, visit, or patronize, and to do this costs some time and resources. So, without sounding too needy, could you help us out by pitching some funds our way? You can drop some bucks in the tip jar by donating at whatsupabq.com. And if you know about a local business or establishment that should be featured, or you own one yourself, drop us a line at abqwhatsup@gmail.com. Again, the website is whatsupabq.com, and the email is abqwhatsup@gmail.com. We've also got a few sponsorship spots open, so get in touch with us soon to reserve your business's time on the show. What's Up ABQ is produced by Lindsay and Ryan with post-production assistance from me, Paul Nixon, at paulnixonvo.com. Make sure and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. Tell your friends about us, and thanks for listening.